Welcome everyone to Team Early Childhood Podcast. Hope you're having a fantastic week. It's Aaron Bradbury here, and this week I am going to be interviewing Kelly Shields and Martin Williams. Hi both.
Hello.
Hi Aaron, you okay?
Yeah, how are you two?
Oh, fabulous. A very happy day being on this spectacular podcast, and we're looking forward to it.
Oh, good. Well, so everyone knows, we've planned five questions. Everyone knows that we've got five questions. But Martin and Kelly, could you, just for our listeners, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. Me first, it looks like. Okay, so my name is Martin. My name is Martin Williams. I've been in the early years, probably about 10 years, I would say. Before that, I did lots of other things, like I worked in sales, I had loads of different jobs, worked in Tenerife, other random things like that. But in the end, I kind of settled into this job in early years. And I would say definitely a massive bonus experiencing other things before coming in, because I understood from pretty much when I started that it was the number one job for me, basically. Worked in mainly in preschool and in reception for the last, pretty much the last 10 years. And for the last 3 years, I've been a trainer and a bit of a consultant as well, mostly in the north until last year when I was sort of expanding into the Midlands as well. And all the training I did, I tried to make it as practical as I could, and I took loads and loads of boxes with me, and it was all about like phonics and maths, and I just tried to make it exciting and sort of inspirational as I possibly could. And for the last sort of 6 months or so since lockdown, I've been writing books as well. I've written five books now, and again, it's a similar kind of emphasis on practical ideas, inspiration, and all that kind of stuff. Over to Kelly.
Hi, I'm still here. So I'm Kelly, and I'm a consultant and trainer, and also I can call myself an author now. It's quite exciting. So I've worked in early years since I left school, so it's like 23 years. I've been a forest school leader for 11 years now, one of the first. I was working in one of the nurseries that really pushed forest school forward. And I work for the NDNA, doing a bit of training for them and for the Early Learning Alliance as well. And I've been kept busy throughout all this pandemic, really, working in a setting and helping them with their environments and their policies and procedures. So it's actually been a really busy year.
Yeah, I think it's been quite busy for most of us, to be fair, hasn't it? It's been, everyone thinks that we're just sat at home, but actually it's done on the contrary. We're probably busier than we've ever been. So you're both here to talk to us about early years and wellbeing, and I know that you've got some exciting news to tell us further on in the podcast. But why did you both... Obviously, you've told us why you're in early years and the passion. Obviously, I can hear it in your voices. I don't know about the maths and the phonics, though, Martin. I don't know if we can actually make those fun. But I'll have to come to one of your sessions and see if we can make make phonics and maths fun.
Honestly, it's like a Hindu or something. Some of my sessions, I promise you.
That sounds more like my type of thing. But why early years and well-being, and why have them two come together for you?
Well-being has always, it's been a focus for me for a long time. I also am a relaxed kids coach as well, although that seems like a million years ago, doing relaxed kids over a weekend. That all ended back in March. But I was, as a manager, I always used to find myself getting really stressed and, you know, suffered with anxieties, but didn't actually realise that that's what was wrong with me. It took me to come out of it to see that that's what it was. So for me, at the moment, we're living in a time where the stigma of mental health, people are talking about it. So we're in a good place at the moment to promote these mindful practices and hopefully improve well-being and mental health for everybody in early years, the children, for the staff, and for ourselves.
So is it something that you're looking at holistically within, say, for example, a setting? So is it a holistic approach, or do you decompartmentalise it and maybe look at children, staff, their families?
It's pretty much like, the whole picture we're going for. Because it's kind of like a culture, isn't it? It's sort of... And we're trying to sort of show the steps that you need to take, which involves everything, you know, to create a sort of really good, outstanding, mindful culture where well-being is really valued. There are so many things that feed into that. You know, the staff well-being is massive. The children's well-being as well. And they kind of work together, you know, they're tied together very strongly. But also it's all about, you know, engaging the parents, and there's lots of, like, the environment. There's loads of different parts of it. And we're trying to, in the course that we've created, just sort of really condense everything and make it sort of simple, but a kind of step-by-step guide.
Okay, so we're going to move on to question number two, because I think it really kind of marries itself with what we're talking about. So I hear off the grapevine that you've got a book coming out. So Martin and Kelly also said at the beginning, now she's an author, so you kind of gave it away, really. But so you've got a book coming out. So can you tell us a little bit about that book? And can you also tell us what, if we was a practitioner or a parent, what would we get from reading the book?
Well, absolutely, absolutely. I think this is the fifth book that I've written in just the last 6 months as well. And all the books that I've sort of released so far have been massive emphasis on ideas, basically. They're pretty much 100% ideas and practical tips. There's a bit of research, but it's kind of all tied in. And this book is no exception. The ones I've done in the past, I've done the 101 social distancing ideas. I did a fine motor book as well called Squiggles Fiddle Splat, 101 Genius Fine Motor Ideas. And all the books are kind of similar kind of thing like that. This one is going to be 101 mindfulness games for happy minds. And again, it's a huge emphasis on what you can actually do. There's a very short introduction, but it's straight into 101 super simple games that will really help develop mindfulness and well-being in young children. And pretty much all of the activities require either no resources or just very, very simple resources that are either cheap or free, either free or cheap. You've probably got lying around anyway.
Yeah,
and it's just a way of kind of just using them in simple ways and getting children on board with what you're doing. And definitely very usable by parents as well, not just people who work in education. These are games that kind of apply both at home and in school and nursery as well. And when we were writing it, we were talking about how many of the games you can actually use as adults as well, even though they are designed for sort of 3 or 4 year olds. But you can kind of do the kind of adult-friendly version as well, and kind of, you know, definitely useful for adults also.
Have you been able to, because I haven't seen the book yet, so I do hope to get hold of one, hint. Well, you're not far from me now, Kelly, so I know I can come and find you.
Gift wrapping it as we speak. up with all sorts of bows and stuff.
Oh, brilliant. So I know it comes from you. So you're talking very much about the ideas of mindfulness activities that you can do with children. Are they kind of differentiated for different age groups, or are they?
Yeah,
are you relying on the practitioner to be able to do that?
I mean, all the books that I've written are quite open-ended. And even though it's 101 games, I try and put in top tips for different age groups. It's sort of targeted children aged 3 to 7, this book.
Okay,
so it's quite open, but I would say the vast majority of the games you can do with 3-year-olds, definitely, but you can make it more challenging for older children as well, and I've tried to put that throughout the book. You know, if you want to make it harder for 7-year-olds, six-year-olds, try this. And there's lots of different extensions you can do. Having said that, I think a lot of mindfulness games are quite simple, and I think that's kind of the beauty of them. They don't really need to be challenging. It's more of a case of simple concepts made fun, and that they will work. The quicker you can explain them and demonstrate how to play the game, the better it will work.
And also,
got no balloons in there, have you? Petrified of balloons, you see. I'm absolutely petrified. I remember going, I remember doing like a nurturing program, which, as you know, is all about well-being and emotional literacy and stuff. And they brought all these balloons out. Well, I had an absolute panic attack because I'm absolutely petrified of balloons, just of them popping.
Oh,
and the activity was to pop the balloons. Well, obviously, you can imagine me, I was screaming like a banshee in the corner. So if there's any balloons, I'll be missing those ones because I don't like
Not in this one. I used to do a behaviour course and I had balloons in. And I, you're not alone. You're genuinely not alone. I have lots of people with a similar fear. One lady had to go and stand in the car park while we did the balloon bit.
I think it was from my childhood, to be honest. I think everyone used to think that balloons were this fun thing, but they're like, they're not. They're I'd rather scary clowns than a balloon. I really would.
Pennywise.
Right. Oh, yeah, do you know? And he pops his balloon. So I thought, no, I always remember as a child, like they'd bring these balloons out and everybody would be jumping and popping them. And I used to just think, oh, my God.
No, nightmare, it's not, isn't
for
it?
Me. Not for me at
all. Another one there, cotton wool. Quite a few people
have
found.
My husband's got a thing about cotton wool. He can't stand
terrified of cotton wool. Don't even want to be in the vicinity of it. I used to find that all sorts of strange things during the practical workshops. But probably the big ones are balloons, cotton wool, Play-Doh as well. Some people will not touch it or kind of,
Well, those people that can't touch it obviously have never worked in early years, have they?
I was going to say, I've been on job as the cotton wool.
All right, so who's going to? I mean, hopefully, one of you will answer this question. So, I think well-being for children and colleagues in the early years is really, really important, and we've seen quite a rise in emotional health. The discussions that we're having currently around well-being, but why now? Why do you think we should engage with well-being now? And what are the benefits of this?
Well, I think after this year, well-being is going to have an impact on everybody. Everyone's had different experiences of lockdown. The children have, parents have, the staff have. So it's an ideal opportunity, really. This time is about us looking after ourselves and each other. You know, over the last few years, there's been quite a lot of research with the Mind Matters survey and the Health and Safety Executive about the teacher wellbeing document. And officers are recognising it now. They're talking about workload versus wellbeing and inspections when they get back around to doing them. so it underpins everything. And I know I've got a child in year one. And they've been doing everything about wellbeing since they've been back. We just want to take that further and embed it more as a culture. We're just trying to really promote that wellbeing, you know, as Martin said, is cheap. It doesn't need lots of fancy resources. It's not a tick list. It doesn't need masses of paperwork. It is about a culture and a mindset.
So you've both talked about that culture. So if you were a nursery, like a private nursery or even a school nursery or another earlier set in a preschool, and they're probably listening to this podcast currently, where would you suggest they start? How would they start that culture within their setting?
Really by understanding sort of what mindfulness is and well-being is. I think, you know, settings are all different, but I think, you know, starting with management, or it's this whole looking at work-life balance and workloads. But yeah, it needs to start. Well, it can start anywhere. This is why we looked at it holistically, wasn't it? You sort of need to build on it. So it needs to start with having that mindset to want to be that sort of provision and wanting to provide that sort of support to the children. And then it is about engaging the children's parents, because those external influences are just, you know, so important.
So do you think then, so if, say, if I was a nursery owner and I've got this day nursery, and would I start with the staff? Would I start with the staff? Would I look at professional development and then move on from that to the children and then the families?
Yeah, definitely. That's the order we recommend. The order we recommend is, start with the value it first. You've got to make the decision. you want to do it, you know, that mindfulness and well-being will have a big impact, which definitely will. And it will also have a huge impact on learning. I think that is, as well as nurseries, I think schools need to understand that, you know, mindfulness underpins everything and it underpins all learning across the curriculum. And if you kind of get the mindfulness and the well-being right, that will have a huge impact on progress and achievement. Yeah. So it's making that decision to start with. Yeah. Then it's, it's working on the staff first, isn't it? And it's giving them lots of strategies to develop mindfulness.
And that will then... Martin, I suppose it doesn't have to cost a lot of money either, does it? I mean, this
absolutely.
You know,
it's not really a resource heavy thing. It's not like doing your outside or doing, you know, different. Which again, I think the outdoors can be done reasonably cheaply if you have the kind of the know how. But certainly, mindfulness is pretty much can be done with no budget at all. Definitely, it's more of a mindset. It's more valuing it, and then having a toolkit of all the activities and the things you can do.
I suppose it's about having that shared ethos, isn't it? And
yeah,
you know, and empathy doesn't cost anything either, does it? You know, empathy can probably be one of the strongest tools that we've got. Children can be quite empathetic. And sometimes it's just nice to sit back and watch them because actually they can do empathy without adults having to show them how to do it. I don't know if you agree, but... it's amazing, isn't it, when you
just take that
step back and observe the child, they can be quite empathetic without kind of realizing that actually what they're doing is being empathetic. So this is quite a big question, really, so I'm absolutely completely blown away that you're trying to that both of you are trying to make early years well-being mainstream by actually thinking about the kind of activities that you've already said are you know, free or next to nothing really cost wise around children's emotional health. So thank you for that, because I think it's really, really important that we stress that, you know, something as important as this doesn't have to cost a lot of money. But for our listeners, could you give us 5 key principles that you would suggest that we start with when it comes to wellbeing with children and our colleagues?
Yep, fantastic. Yeah, well, we've had a good think about this question.
Oh, brilliant!
we've split it up into the 5, and just by chance, they kind of time with the five modules in the course we put together as well.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Just here we go. Number one is it's like embedding an understanding of what mindfulness is, which is not a hugely like hard thing to get your head around, but it's just a bit of an understanding what it is and the definition and a bit of the research behind it, maybe, you know, just like why well-being is so important at the moment, and just that kind of thing, just laying the foundations. That's definitely step one. I'll pass you over to Kelly for step two.
Okay, so step two is the learning environments. There's lots of different things to consider in your learning environment, and creating areas for reflection for children, and what sort of resources that you're giving them, opportunities to use open-ended resources and promote curiosity. You know, is your classroom overwhelming and stopping the children from focusing on what you want them to do? You know, there's a lot of people going towards more natural, and it's not just to be modern and pretty, it is because it creates these areas that your children can focus on what it is that you want them to do. And also sort of like decluttering and things like that we talk a lot about. We've put this environmental audit together as well, which we do give people, and say, you know, not everyone's in a position to completely revamp their provision, but actually there's little things that you could change to promote mindfulness and well-being in a classroom.
Yeah,
it's about doing that.
A lot of quick wins, isn't it? It's not about revamping the whole thing. It's all about just some simple tweaks you can put into place that have a big impact on the environment, definitely. Step three, this is like the big one. This is basically activities. This is a full toolkit of all the mindful activities you could ever need. And there's obviously 101 of them in the book, but in the course of all, we can go into depth of lots and lots of activities across the entire curriculum. There's things like breathing games, Things like, I'll just give you a few random examples, like teddy breathing, which is a great game you play with teddy bears, bunny breathing, there's all sorts of random games like that. We do lots of yoga, qigong, there's things like peer massage and lots of like strategies you can do for that kind of thing. Mindful movement, because a lot of children, they like to move at the same time as being mindful. And it's not sort of, I think we sometimes think of mindfulness as being still and sitting down and meditating and all that kind of thing. A lot of children don't really like doing that much. A lot of, you know, movement is very natural for most children. And so, but you can link mindfulness and movement together. And we show you lots of different ways of how to do that.
Yeah.
And we just do, you know, literacy, the whole lot. You can link everything to mindfulness. Definitely can.
It was the yoga that got me. I mean, the last time I did yoga, I mean, I don't think I'd be able to even move now. I don't. I think if I stretched my arm, I'd probably like pull a muscle or something. But yoga's really good for your breathing, isn't it? And
yeah,
really kind of just taking in. Because I used to teach. You're going to laugh, but I used to teach baby yoga.
Oh wow!
So yeah. I'm a baby massage trained instructor, developmental baby massage. So I get that kind of element of touch, because you talked very much about yoga and you know, massage, you know.
Yeah.
That element of touch alone can be quite powerful, can't it?
Yeah, it's all about connecting with your body. I was training to be a relaxed kids coach, they did this really simple thing where you just put your fingertips and you touched from your head to your toes and down the back of your legs. And I thought, I can't remember the last time I touched the back of my leg. Like, it's just about being conscious of, you know, that's your body, you're in control of it, and that it's all about connection.
Yeah, I can't reach mine, Kelly, so
yeah,
I can't even see my toes because of my belly, so you know, so I'll have to, one day I will reach my toes, that's going to be my aim.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted, Martin, I do apologise.
Not at all.
I get carried away, you see, if everyone who listens know full well, I get into it, you see, I'm now thinking, oh God, you know, I could do that, I could include that, so I can't wait for your books.
There is some tree yoga in there. That might be quite good.
Oh, yeah, you found that, Aaron, definitely. You'd easily be able to do that. We tried to make the simplest possible yoga positions honestly anyone can do.
You mean actually doing it with a tree or actually pretending to be a tree?
Pretending to be
a tree. Oh, right.
Okay.
I was thinking I ain't got no trees by me, and the ones that I have are in the old neighbour's garden, so I don't think she'd be quite happy with me going and doing yoga in a garden.
That could be idea number 102 for the book. We'll send us a
phone. Go to your neighbour's tree and use the yoga. Yeah. Sorry, number four.
We touched on it. It's about a partnership with external influences.
Right.
So, you know, we're gonna encourage the children and teach them all of these skills. We could do with letting the parents know, and carers and other external influences. So we have done like a parent newsletter template to give to settings, and you know, have an initial workshop with parents to let them know why we're doing it, and get them to share photographs of them doing things at home, maybe a bit of tree yoga. Just to, you know, embed it and get everyone excited about it.
Do you know what though? We laugh, but I can actually see, you know, connecting like with the outdoors. I mean, you could call it tree yoga, but actually going and doing yoga outdoors, you know, using the tree to balance up and stuff like that would be.
Definitely.
You know, I can actually see, I mean, we laugh, but I can actually see it happening, you know. It'd be really, really good for some of our young children to connect with 100%. Nature and the outdoors, and, you know, and that whole element of outdoors and well-being kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
Massively.
There's a whole chapter of the book about engaging with, like, natural elements, you know, like trees, even like puddles, you know, things you can do with puddles, like fun games, and you're walking through leaves, all this, all the natural stuff. Even things like trees, like taking photographs of trees or touching.
Walking.
There's so much, just connecting. Even like really simple things like in a water tray, just putting your hands in and kind of experiencing the wateriness of the water, what it feels like, and, you know, how does it flow off your hands when you bring them out? Just the really simple things, and engaging with the elements around us.
Yeah, I think that's it. I can't wait for this book. I can't wait to read
it. No, because
I think actually you're hitting on to something that maybe all those day-to-day activities that we do, that we take for granted, sometimes it's nice just to take that minute and reflect on why we're doing it, what we're doing. I can't wait to read some of
your... No, it's completely true, yeah. It's like the tempo, I think, of modern education is so fast compared to probably what it was a few years ago. And you're trying to cram so much in all the time. There's there's like targets and all the rest of it. We're just trying to take a step back, I suppose, and change up the tempo of the day and having moments of reflection, appreciating what's around us and all that kind of thing. But how to do that in a practical way.
And there's no real right or wrong way of doing these things. That's the only thing. You can do them inside, you can do them outside. A lot of them are good for social distance. We didn't write it with that in mind, but actually a lot of them can be done in that way.
No, totally, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's very adaptable.
And number five?
Staff wellbeing.
Yeah.
So like we said, prior to this, that's what I was doing. I was doing a lot of workplace wellbeing, using relaxed kids, but with staff, and teaching them some relaxation techniques. So at the end of this, we talked to them about all these wonderful things we want them to do. And then actually everybody gets a bit of meditation, put on some relaxing music. And, you know, it's so important to find that time for themselves. And everyone does really need to think about work-life balance and the workload versus well-being. Yeah,
it's quite a stressful... I mean, well-being now more than ever is probably something that, you know, as teachers, as early educators, you know, we can... just that 5 minutes, can really make a difference, can't it?
Definitely.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Just even having a lunch break.
Yeah.
Sounds, you know...
Yeah. Going off one of them. Yeah. I'm at home and I don't even get a bloody lunch break. Yeah. So.
And we're all guilty of it, but actually, it's about focus. It's like we talk about mindfulness and getting the children to focus. It's the same for us. If just that 10-minute walk on your lunch break can recharge you for the afternoon, and it makes you more productive. Yeah. So it is good for your well-being, but actually, from a productivity point of view,
Get better results as well.
Yeah,
it's double header.
Okay, so I want to go back to the book. So we've kind of got an idea that there's lots of activities in there. Where can I get the book from, and when is it available?
Good question. Yeah, it's going to be available from about the Thursday of the half term.
29th. Day?
Okay, 29th. Yep.
29th.
Okay. 29th. I know.
It's going to be available just on Amazon.
Basically. Okay.
And from that day. And so,
Can we get physical copies?
You can. Yeah, you can get either a paperback or you can get the ebook. And I'm almost certainly going to do an audio book as well. I'm just experimenting with audiobooks at the moment, but it probably won't be available immediately. But in the near future, an audiobook will be out there as well, hopefully.
Cool. And do we know the cost yet of the book? So have you got an
It will definitely be it will definitely be half price for the first 4 or 5 days. That is the time to strike. The ebook will be half price.
Right.
That is definitely the time to strike. First 4 days, go for it. It'd probably something along the range of about $3.99.
Wow.
For 4 days, then it'll be up to $7.99.
That is the plan. Even for an ebook, $7.99 is good value, because the way you've just told us with all those activities, as a teacher or a nursery practitioner or somebody working with children, you've got over 100 activities, and you just haven't got to think, have you? You can see what you're doing, why you're doing it, and really try and incorporate it into your planning and your day.
Yeah.
So, I think it's very good value for money.
It's the lifetime of mindfulness planning, because it's the whole curriculum. So if you get the 101 games, you've got everything you'll ever need, really. There's nothing, and it's evergreen. It's going to be the same in 10 or 20 years. mindfulness. It's just one of these things that exists. You know, it's outside of politics and policies and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it will work the same in 10 years as it does now. Lots of gorgeous photos in the book as well. Some of Kelly's children, my own, trying out some of these spectacle yoga and all that kind of stuff. And just trying to make it as simple and visual as possible. And there'll be a cheat sheet that goes with the book as well. Of the, you know, one piece of paper with all the games on, as well as we're hoping to do some lots of bonus materials as well. There'll be a few videos of me and Kelly and other things that if you get the book in the first sort of, I think it's going to be the first 5 days, you will have access to the bonus materials as well. Wow. All sorts of exciting, exciting goodies.
Yeah, we keep finishing it and then we'll do something else. thing of mindfulness.
You've talked... Sorry, Kelly. That's all right. And you've talked very much about training. So do you offer training to settings on this?
We do. Yes, we've put together an online training course called the Happy Minds Academy, which is a very sort of positive, happy kind of sounding course. It's basically it's about 2 hours of online videos with myself and Kelly. We walk you through our five-step system. That we kind of went through before, you know, like laying the foundations, then getting your environment right, the lots and lots of activities across curriculum, how to engage the parents. You know, we've got like a 5-step plan. If you follow the plan, it will definitely work. How to, you know, increase the staff wellbeing, all that kind of stuff. It's all in the training. Plus, as well, it's not just an online video course. We have an online community as well. We have a customers only Facebook group. So if you buy the training, you're admitted into this customers only Facebook group where you can you have 24 hour access to myself and Kelly. You can ask us questions, you can share any successes, all that kind of stuff.
Even at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh yeah, especially 2 o'clock.
That's usually when I check the app. Right.
as well, you will get everyone that joins the course, they get a 30-minute coaching call with Kelly as well. Where they can ask any questions they like, and it, you know, just trying to get a bespoke plan for their setting. We're just trying to do anything we can think of that will actually make it work, basically.
Be
as successful as possible.
And what about the website? Which website is that on?
Yeah, it's on earlyimpactlearning.com.
Okay, fabulous. There you go, everyone. So Kelly and Martin's book will be out in the next couple of weeks. And if you want to learn any more about their training, then you can go to earlyimpactlearning.com.
Then go on the online courses bit and you'll find Happy Minds Academy.
Happy Minds Academy. That does sound exciting. okay, so we're on to our last question. Everybody gets this question asked of them. So it's kind of like, you know, every podcast, you'll get this question. So if I could grant you 3 wishes, what would they be?
Okay. And all the questions that we've had, I think this is the one we've been debating the most. Like, do we want to say lottery, win, or... I think the number one for me at the minute is just a bit of stability. I think this pandemic is, you know, the early years is always challenging. Always has been, always will be, but at the moment, you know, it's just, we could do with that bit of stability. I miss people and face-to-face connection, and I'm looking forward to a time where we can get back out into settings and connect with people and, you know, go to conferences. And we had the Brewheads, didn't we, booked just before all this, and, you know, those sort of events.
Yeah.
That's what I really miss.
Well, that we've tried to continue that connection, really. But I know you were going to come to the Brewed, weren't you? And you know, and I was gutted that I had to cancel it. But, you know, hopefully it will happen again at some point. So
it was that was the turning point weekend, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, it was that weekend. It was doomed from the start. We planned afternoon tea and everything. You know, we brought all the cakes in, and Val was like, Aaron, what am I going to do with all this afternoon tea? So it was sad. It was sad, but at the same time, everybody was so supportive. And you know, that for me is what made the difference. Everyone's kindness and, you know, don't worry about it type of thing. You know. Number two.
Number two, right. Well, we tried to keep all these related to education. We were thinking about other things, but we weren't educated in the end. So this is my one. This is a big bugbear of mine. Streamlining. So this is this was definitely probably my number one priority all through my teaching career, I'd say, streamlining. And I basically mean by this, cutting down all the necessary things you can. I think that is definitely the way to go in education. And I found this even more when I've sort of come out of education a bit now and I've got my own like business, basically. And I find the more unnecessary things you can kind of cut out, the better. And I've really like learned that strongly. In education, I would love to like do a kind of trial year where there's no paperwork at all. There's no kind of, you know, no marking, no sort of, you know, minimal planning, or like just nothing, basically. Just this is like my ideal world, basically.
That is
where
great.
It's all about it's all about action and doing things and not bureaucracy. I would love to see that happen, but
you never know. One day, you know, the government might say, do you know what, let's do a research project on that. Which school would like to offer to do that? I'm sure most schools would probably put forwards.
They'd well for it, wouldn't they? Yeah, most of them.
Yeah, they would. Absolutely. Yeah. But do you know, it would be fantastic, wouldn't it, to see the difference?
Absolutely.
You know, and we know as educators, as you know, as research informed people, that would make a massive difference to our children's outcomes as well. But I'm sure there will be other people that will tell us otherwise. So yeah, wish number three.
Just to have an impact on wellbeing in early years and beyond, really. Like, we just, this is, I think, the start of the campaign, really. And I'd just like it to grow. So by having, like, the follow-up calls and having the online community, people can tell us what they want to do next.
Yeah.
So if it's more stuff around, you know, relaxing techniques for staff, if it's help with managers and leaders and ideas around how to support them with work-life balance. I just hope it makes an impact and on the children, on everyone.
That's ultimately what it should be about is the outcomes for the children. And that leads us to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much both. And thank you also for discussing that, you know, not only about your book, but also about the importance of wellbeing for our children as well. So thank you both for joining us this week. Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Joe. It's been a pleasure.
Great. Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah.
Were you nervous? Were you nervous? Oh,
terrified. It's like Paxman's going to get grilled by Paxman.
Well, hopefully all of our listeners,
knees were knocking.
Hopefully all of our listeners know that I'm not that bad. But thank you everybody for listening to Martin and Kelly, and I hope you have a fantastic week. And once again, thank you both for joining Team Early Childhood Podcast.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks.